Face the Nation, coming up next.
Do you want to learn how to earn commissions of up to 20% by laundering millions of foreign dollars?
Well, we can't help you with that. But among the many IT problems we solve, Barracuda's email security solutions keep email phishing attacks like this from entering your business network and any valuable data from leaking out. Reclaim your network like 150,000 other businesses have. To learn more about stopping email-borne threats, visit barracuda.com/email.
I'm Bob Schieffer, and today on Face the Nation, it may seem a long way off to the rest of us, but the Republicans have descended on New Hampshire, and campaign 2016 is off and running.
When Hillary Clinton travels, there's going to need to be two planes, one for her and her entourage and one for her baggage.
Most of the huge Republican field was there, and to the surprise of no one, Hillary Clinton was topic A.
Hillary Clinton's going to raise $2.5 billion, which that's a lot of Chipotle, my friends.
We'll hear about that and a lot more from Marco Rubio. Then we'll talk to former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, who may actually challenge Clinton for the Democratic nomination. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin will be here to talk politics and the latest on the Iran nuclear deal, plus our panel and a look back at the Oklahoma City bomb. It's all ahead because this is Face the Nation. Good morning. When we sat down with Marco Rubio at the Manchester Community College, he had choice words on Hillary Clinton, said flatly, "We may have to go to war with the Iranians to stop them from building a nuclear weapon," and he talked candidly about deciding to run against his friend and mentor, Jeb Bush. We started with a simple question. Why do you want to be president?
I believe the country's living a historic moment. It's transitioning into this post-industrial era, an era of extraordinary opportunity. Our ideas are not allowing our nation to fulfill its potential in this new century. I believe I have the ideas for the country. I believe I have the vision for the country. I believe I'm positioned to help lead this country to this new American century. I think the 21st century is going to be better than the 20th century, but there's some things we're going to have to do to make that happen.
You said the other day that this election presents a generational choice about what kind of country we're going to be. Didn't we just do that?
Well, I think Obama campaigned on some of those themes. Unfortunately, his ideas don't help achieve it. It's not just enough to have new ideas. They have to be good ideas.
You know, you're young, you're bright, you've been in the Senate, but not for a very long time. A lot of Republicans think the last time they chose somebody with that very same profile, they didn't choose him, but it didn't work out very well. How do you convince your party you're not you-know-who?
Well, first of all, I think there's a dramatic difference from President Obama and I in our experience. I'm actually the only candidate thinking about running for president that served at the local, state, and federal level, served 9 years in the Florida legislature. I was the Speaker of the House. I'll have served a full term in the Senate. The presidency is a big job, and I'm prepared for that.
Let's talk about immigration. Mm-hmm. You're Hispanic. You have a wonderful life story. You were part of that bipartisan group that put together an immigration reform bill. You voted for it, and then when you got a lot of heat from people in your own party, you walked away from it.
Well, that's not an accurate assessment. What I'm saying to people is we can't do it in a massive piece of legislation. And I know because I tried. We understand that we have to deal with 12 million human beings that are in this country that have been here for longer than a decade. We know we have to deal with this. We are not prepared to deal with it until first you can prove to us this will never happen again.
Well, if you became president, would you sign the bill that you put together into law?
Well, that's a hypothetical that will never happen. What I would do if I was president, the first thing I would do is I would ask Congress to pass a very specific bill that puts in place E-Verify, an entry-exit tracking system to prevent visa overstays, and improve security on the border. Once we achieve that, step two would be we would modernize our legal immigration system, less family-based, more merit-based. And then the third step would be to pass a bill that goes to the 10 million people that are here, 12 million that are here illegally. If they've been here for longer than a decade, they have to pass a background check, they have to learn English, they have to pay taxes, they have to pay a fine, and they would get a work permit. And after a substantial period of time in that status, assuming they haven't violated any of the conditions of that status, they would be allowed to apply for legal residency, just like anybody else would, not a special process. And after you're a legal resident, after a number of years, by law, you're allowed to apply for citizenship. It's a long process. It's a reasonable process. It's a fair process. But it has to happen in that order. And it begins with serious enforcement measures.
Your friend, your mentor, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, you say you're not running against him. But how can you not run against him?
I have a tremendous personal affection and admiration for him. And my view of it is there will be multiple people running. We're blessed as Republicans. We have a strong field of quality people that are running. And I think the Democrats are struggling to find one, and we have eight or nine. And I think we're going to be a better party for it. I think America's going to get a better president for it.
Was that hard for you to decide, well, it looks like he's going to run too, but I'm going to
run? Well, it's
a
unique situation. You know, I don't think anyone could have envisioned it working this way. But there comes a point in time where if you have an opportunity to serve your country legitimately, a legitimate opportunity to serve your country at its highest office, especially someone like me that feels a tremendous debt to America, it's an opportunity I had to take seriously, and I did. But at the end of the day, it won't change how I feel about Governor Bush. He remained my friend and someone I admire both personally and politically.
Why would you be a better president than Hillary Clinton?
It starts with, I believe, a Clinton presidency. It would basically be another 4 years of Barack Obama. Up to this point, I've not seen her distinguish herself on a single issue from what the president is doing now. I think that's particularly true on foreign policy. We cannot ignore that she was the Secretary of State during the first 4 years of the Obama presidency and has virtually no meaningful achievement to show for it. On the contrary, whether it's the reset in Russia or our response to Benghazi or everything in between, the Obama foreign policy during the Clinton years, especially as Secretary of State, have been a disaster for America. Today, our allies trust us less, our enemies fear us less, and America has less influence in the world today than it did 4 to 6 years ago.
What is the single most important issue, the biggest challenge in this campaign and for the next president?
Well,
is it foreign policy or is it domestic
policy? Well, on a federal perspective, it always begins with foreign policy because the most important obligation of the federal government is to keep us safe. And today we face threats from abroad that are multifaceted in comparison to what they were 10 or 15, 20 years ago. We face the risk of a rising China. We see the erosion of NATO's ability to blunt Putin's efforts to rewrite and relitigate the end of the Cold War in Europe. And then we see the rise in the Middle East of both multiple radical jihadist groups, both ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and other affiliated groups. So the world has it's a multifaceted threat.
Well, do you think we're winning?
Well, I don't think we're doing as well as we could be on any of these fronts.
Can you, Senator, envision under any circumstances sending American ground forces back into the Middle East?
It's not the ideal outcome. I mean, certainly there are circumstances, hypothetically, where that would happen. It isn't the first option because it isn't the best option. The best option would be the combination of a Sunni-Arab combined army, Egyptians, Saudis, Jordanians, who confront a radical Sunni group on the ground and defeat them, in combination with U.S. air support, U.S. logistical and intelligence support, and embedded with some U.S. special operations forces. That is the best option moving forward. In the absence of that, we have what we have now, which is we have outsourced the ground operation to Shia militias under the complete control of General Soleimani and the Revolutionary Guard of Iran, and they're not leaving when this is over. If ISIS is defeated, they will then become the predominant group on the ground, and you've just triggered a whole new era of Iranian influence over Iraq, but also the increase for sectarian violence in that region for years
to
come.
And does that present a threat to the American homeland?
Absolutely. To begin with, I mean, Iran's hegemonic ambitions present a threat to our homeland. Iran continues to develop long-range rockets. What are they? They're not trying to put a man on the moon. The reason why they're developing intercontinental ballistic missiles is to hold it as a leverage point initially against Europe and ultimately against the United States.
Where do you come down then on the negotiations with Iran on trying to limit their nuclear weapons?
I don't think they'll be successful. They're leaving in place massive amounts of infrastructure. Russia's going to provide anti-aircraft capabilities. The Chinese are going to build a nuclear reactor capability, all of which is the basic infrastructure you need to weaponize that system.
So if you don't get a deal, what's the alternative? Do we have to go to war? Is it necessary to be absolutely certain they don't have a nuclear weapon or the capability to build one?
And I think that the best way to have achieved that is to leave in place both the unilateral sanctions and the international sanctions. You combine that with a very clear demarcation to the Iranian regime, and that is this. If you cross this threshold, you will face military action on the part of the United States. We don't want that to happen, but the risk of a nuclear Iran is so great that option must be on the table.
So if it came to that, that would be an option that you would actually
absolutely
consider and use.
And let me tell you why. If we don't do it, someone else will. The Saudis are not going to sit there and watch Iran build a Shia bomb without a Sunni bomb. The Israelis are not going to sit there and watch a regime that calls for their destruction develop the capability to do so. But again, we would hope to have avoided that point by severely limiting and sanctioning Iran for its nuclear ambitions. And quite frankly, I think this deal could literally lead to increasing the prospects for war.
But what you're saying here, we cannot let Iran become a nuclear power. And we have to do whatever is necessary, if that includes going to war.
Absolutely.
With Iran.
By the way, if Iran doesn't need nuclear power, peaceful nuclear power. They're an oil-rich country. The only reason why they want enrichment and reprocessing capability is they want to one day be able to be nuclear threshold or nuclear possessed.
Let me ask you, we're talking about things here on Earth. Let's talk about things above the Earth and the whole idea of climate change. You have said, if I'm correct, that humans are not responsible for climate change. Did you say that?
What I said is humans are not responsible for climate change in the way some of these people out there are trying to make us believe, for the following reason. I believe the climate is changing because there's never been a moment where the climate is not changing. The question is, what percentage of that or what is due to human activity? If we do the things they want us to do, cap and trade, you name it, how much will that change the pace of climate change versus how much will it cost our economy? Scientists can't tell us what impact it would have on reversing these changes. But I can tell you with certainty it would have a devastating impact on our economy.
Talk a little bit about social issues. You have said you're against gay marriage. Do you think that homosexuality is a choice?
Well, first, it's not that I'm against gay marriage. I believe the definition of the institution of marriage should be between one man and one woman. States have always regulated marriage, and if a state wants to have a different definition, you should petition the state legislature and have a political debate. I don't think courts should be making that decision, and I don't believe same-sex marriage is a constitutional right. I also don't believe that your sexual preferences are a choice for the vast and enormous majority of people. In fact, the bottom line is that, I believe that sexual preference is something that people are born with.
Senator, we thank you.
Thank you.
Marco Rubio, and now I want to give you the very latest on that tragic breaking news from overseas. A fishing boat carrying the estimated 700 migrants capsized in waters north of Libya overnight. These were people trying to get out of Libya. Rescue efforts are underway, but a UN official says they fear this is a tragedy of vast proportions. CBS News, of course, will continue to follow this story. But we want to get back to politics now and turn to former Democratic governor of Maryland, Martin O'Malley, who has actually said he may challenge Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, while all these Republicans were in New Hampshire, she was out in Iowa driving around in a little van out there. Just first, are you going to do this? Are you going to challenge her for the Democratic nomination?
Well, I'm very seriously considering that, and I'll make up my mind by the end of May.
Why?
Because I believe that our country faces big challenges, and I know that leadership's important if we're going to turn these challenges into opportunities. I have 15 years of executive experience as a big city mayor and as a governor, bringing people together to get things done, and I believe that I have the ideas that will help our country move forward to a time when our economy is actually working for all of us again instead of wages declining.
Well, are you going to run against her, or are you going to run against Republicans? I mean, all the Republicans, it's pretty clear they're running against Hillary Clinton. Do you join in that group, or do you have a different story to tell?
Yeah, I think that the best campaigns are not campaigns that are against, but campaigns that are for. In other words, look, our country's doing better than we were 4 years ago. We're creating jobs again. But the vast majority of us are working harder and falling behind. Wages are declining in the United States of America. So I believe what we need to do in order to bring people together is to talk about the ideas, especially if we're going to be the party that actually leads America into the future.
Let me just ask you the same question I asked Marco Rubio. Why would you be a better president than Hillary Clinton?
Because of the experience that I can bring to this job, Bob. The 7 years as the mayor of Baltimore, 8 years as the governor of a state, I guided our state through this recession, and I did so with results that actually matter. The highest median income in the country, middle class that is upwardly mobile, greater participation and fuller participation of my citizens in the economic, social, political life of our state, doing difficult things like passing marriage equality, passing the DREAM Act, doing common sense things that allow new American immigrants to fully participate, pay their taxes, play by the rules, and take care of their families. That's the inclusive America that I believe all of us want to move to.
What do you think of the way she launched her campaign? All these Republicans are up there making speeches, kind of doing it the old-fashioned way. She gets in this little van and drives all the way out there. She's given no interviews, as far as I can tell. She hasn't had a news conference. Can you get the nomination that way, and how will you do it?
Well, look, I'll let others talk, you know, second-guess her strategies and tactics, and she can certainly defend herself. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Secretary Clinton. I believe that the best way to campaign is one-on-one with people. You can't forge a new sort of consensus. You can't forge public opinion by following public opinion, and you have to engage with people in living room after living room, in luncheonettes and lunch counters. I think that's the best type of campaign, is the one-on-one contact, where we actually talk about the better choices we need to make to get earnings to rise again.
Do you think that having more candidates is good for the Democratic Party? I mean, I sit here and look at this. Here's a party that won the last two presidential elections, and yet it comes down to there seems to be this one candidate. Shouldn't there be more people out there? Shouldn't the party have? Why is there nobody but you? And I mean, I don't mean this in a deprecating way toward you, but you seem to be the lone guy who's even thinking about challenging her right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is. But I think it would be an extreme poverty indeed if there weren't more than one person willing to compete for the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party. Look, this is the way I think it's supposed to work. I believe that if you have the executive experience, the ideas that can serve our nation well, and the ability to govern, you should offer your candidacy and then let the people decide. If we do that, then we can be the party that leads our country into the future. But we won't do it unless we offer ideas for the future and break with things like bad trade deals, the systematic deregulation of Wall Street that many Democrats were complicit in and helped get us into this mess.
Governor, I want to thank you. I hope you'll come back when you tell
thank
us
you,
what
Schiefer.
Your decision is.
Thanks very, very much.
Great to see you. And we'll be back in just a minute.
I just scored a sweet deal on sweet tickets at scorebig.com.
Welcome to scorebig.com. Go to all the sports, concerts, and shows you want at the price you want. At ScoreBig, you save on every ticket guaranteed. NFL, NBA, NHL, baseball, theater, and concert tickets, and more. All up to 60% off box office price. Plus, right now, you can save an extra $20 on already low prices. Just go to scorebig.com today and enter promo code 8000. scorebig.com, code 8000.
Are you hiring but not sure where to find the best candidates? As a business owner, I can tell you that your company is only as good as the people you hire. I can also tell you that posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. But when you're short-staffed, there's no time to deal with the dozens of different job sites. Until now. Thanks to ZipRecruiter.com, I can post to 100-plus job sites with one single click and have the highest possible chance of finding that perfect candidate. Just post once, and within 24 hours, watch your candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter has been used by over 300,000 businesses, and you can try it right now for free. Getting the right people for your company is so important. Try ZipRecruiter and get your perfect candidate before they go to somebody else. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/deal. That's ZipRecruiter.com/deal. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/deal.
We're back now with West Virginia's Democratic Senator Joe Manchin. And, Senator, I'm going to get away from the politics for just a minute and talk a little bit about what's going on with this proposed deal with Iran. And, you know, the Supreme Leader there says that we can't do inspections on military bases there. Senator Rubio said he doesn't think this deal is going to go through. I'm beginning to agree with him. I think it's going to be very difficult to get it done under these conditions. What's your take here?
Bob, my take is that I'd simply rather negotiate for peace and use all our diplomacy than declare war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you look at history where we are, 2003, they had 164 centrifuges. At that time, President Bush's administration took a hardline stand. We wouldn't tolerate any. Fast forward to today, they got 19,000. Since they started talking about a year and a half ago, at least it stopped from progressing. So we're, you know, I don't make any bones about it. We don't trust Iran and they don't trust us. This is not about trust. It's about verifying.
Well, if you don't have inspections, real inspections, how can you really be sure?
I've been told from all security meetings I've been in that we are having real inspections. They are in there, and they're seeing, basically, for the first time, the AIA. They're able to be there. Those are the people with the expertise. And to have Mr. Manise, as far as Ernie Manise, our Secretary of Energy, with his expertise, you've got to believe some of the people that have that ability to evaluate. But just going back into Cocoon and saying we don't trust and walk away from this, I don't think there's a senator that doesn't want to be involved in this process. I want to be. I've signed on to the Menendez-Kirk, did not sign on to the Corker Menendez, but I signed Menendez-Kirk, which basically says, as of June the 30th, we will double down on sanctions if you don't have a deal. Let the people that are skilled doing this do their job.
Let's get back to politics here if we can. Do you think Hillary Clinton should have some competition? Would you like to see more serious Democrats in the race? My question is, why aren't there more serious Democrats in the race?
You know, Bob, I support Hillary Clinton. I know Hillary Clinton, and I find her to be warm and engaging, compassionate and tough, all of the above. And I think people are finding that to be the people that engage. She's going to earn every vote. She's working for every vote that she can possibly get. She brings more experience to the table. She's been more on the front lines than any person, more experience than any person we have at that level. She knows these leaders around the world. With that being said, we have to have somebody that can hit the ground running, okay? And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of good people that are showing an interest. There's a lot of them on the Republican side. We have on the Democrat, there'll be more. I just personally believe that Hillary is best prepared to do the job for America.
Let me ask you this, because there's been a lot of talk back in your home state. People are saying you ought to come back there and run for governor. I know you many times along the way here have been pretty discouraged about where things are going. Have you made up your mind what you're going to do with your own future?
Bob, when Senator Byrd died, I had to make the toughest decision of my political life. At that time, I had to decide, should I try to run for Senate or stay in the governorship. I was 2 years into my second term, a job that I love very much. People know that. And it's a job that I thought we did pretty well. We brought people together, Democrats and Republicans. We put the state of West Virginia before our own politics. And we had some pretty good successes with that. I thought maybe I could take that same can-do attitude, that same common sense approach to Washington. I will be the first to tell you I didn't think it would be this difficult. And it's been challenging. But I think we've made some inroads. I really believe that we've changed the whole process to a certain extent in the Senate to where we're willing to put our country first, and I'm going to continue to fight for that. That's the reason I've made a decision to stay in the United States Senate.
You're going to stay and you're going to run for re-election.
I'm going to stay and I'll run for re-election. I want to serve the people of West Virginia the best of my ability, and I've said this, if my country does well, my state will do well. My purpose of being in the state Senate, in the United States Senate, is to serve the people of West Virginia, the most patriotic people in the country. So I look forward to serving the best of my ability. I know that the Senate's not working the way it was intended to and the way it's supposed to, but I'm not going to stop fighting to make it work.
All right. Senator, thanks so much for coming and sharing that with us. I've always said the great thing about being a reporter is the adventure, getting to talk to the people who make the news, seeing things with your own eyes that other people see only through the eyes and lens of others. And I've always said the best training to be a reporter or anything else is to work the police beat, because every story you cover is the worst moment in someone's life. If you can learn to get the right information under those circumstances, you won't be fazed by the high and mighty, and certainly not by the on-the-make politicians and spin doctors. Which is why I want to add a paragraph or two to the rash of stories lately about cops gone wrong. This is not about them. This is about all the cops you don't read about. They deal much of the time with the dregs of our society, the schemers, murderers, those who prey on the weak. And most of the time, the police deal with them humanely and as they should. What we overlook is just how difficult that can be sometimes. It's not easy to remain passive when a child beater looks you in the eye and tells you you have to understand the kid was keeping him awake. It takes a lot of professional training and strong character not to respond in anger. I know, because I spent my early years listening to some of these awful people. Sometimes I wanted to hit them myself. I didn't,
but it helped me understand how hard it is to do a cop's job right. As hard as it is, the great majority of our cops still do just that.
Face the Nation after this short break.
Do you want to learn how to mask your identity to browse inappropriate websites and stream media while at the office?
Well, we can't help you with that. But among the many IT problems we solve, Barracuda's web security solutions keep online activity clean and ensure internet bandwidth performance. Reclaim your network, like 150,000 other businesses already have. To learn more about preventing web-based threats, visit barracuda.com/web.
Welcome back to Face the Nation. Time now for our all-star political panel. April Ryan, the White House correspondent for American Urban Radio Network. She's the author of The Presidency in Black and White. Dana Milbank, columnist for The Washington Post. We want to welcome David Katniss to Face the Nation. He is the senior politics writer for U.S. News and World Report. Plus, we're joined by our own congressional correspondent, Nancy Cordes, and our political director, who has a great future, I think, John Dickerson. Well, it was all Republicans all the time up in New Hampshire this weekend. Hillary Clinton was out in Iowa, but she turned out to be topic A amongst all the Republicans. Here's just a sample.
As I was coming up, I was a little bit startled because I could have sworn I saw Hillary's Scooby-Doo van outside. Well, and then I realized it couldn't possibly be that, because I'm pretty sure y'all don't have any foreign nations paying speakers, right?
This listening tour is something out of North Korea. Would you like to meet the dear leader and ask him anything you would like? How does she get away with this? I don't know. So if you're looking for something new, don't look to her. Look to the 35 people running for president on the Republican side.
Well, John Dickerson, you were out there. I was out there this week while Hillary Clinton was driving around in that little van out there in Iowa.
You couldn't even get all the Republican people running in a van. You need to rent like one of those airport shuttle buses or something. There's so many of them. One thing that was interesting about the Republicans is there's so many of them, but there was no favorite. There's nobody, maybe Chris Christie's doing this, but who's stacking all their chips on New Hampshire the way they have in the past. So it's a freewheeling, open contest. And what's interesting is you see the different way voters are trying to categorize these folks. So on the one hand, they love a speaker like Ted Cruz because he's pure. He just speaks the old-time religion. But then Frank Luntz did a focus group with all the activists one morning on Saturday morning. And he said, raise your hand if you want a senator in the White House. About 3 to 5 did. Raise your hand if you want a governor. The entire room raised their hands. So they love a senator's rhetoric, but do they want the executive experience of a governor in the office? They're all figuring all that stuff out. Good thing they have 10 months to do it.
David, you have been tracking Ted Cruz, among other things, and while they may not want a senator, he has to be taken seriously, I think. And I didn't believe that at the beginning of this, but he raised $4 million the week after he announced his campaign. He's now raised about $30 million. Is he a serious candidate?
He has to be taken seriously. And the Cruz campaign told me that since the end of that first quarter, they've already raised an additional $1 million. So they believe they are in the top tier. Look, most Republicans, you talk to them, they don't believe Ted Cruz will ultimately be the nominee. But with a guy that has that type of money, and he's also establishing the organization, and if you look at the polls, he did get a boomlet in Iowa and New Hampshire, and his campaign has said it has held. That, you know, he's right now second place in New Hampshire. Now, will it hold in the ensuing months? That's too soon to tell. But right now, you'd have to probably bump Ted Cruz up into that top tier, at least for the time being.
You, Nancy, were out in Iowa watching Hillary Clinton. You got to say, it's a very unusual way to start a campaign here. I mean, she hasn't had a news conference
and
yet.
She's a very unusual candidate who doesn't necessarily need as much attention because she isn't in the airport shuttle. She's all by herself in the van. She probably wouldn't mind getting less attention rather than more. The question that a lot of us had who were out on the trail this week was, is this what the entire campaign is going to look like, where she's kept at a distance from us? Or was this just the first week, the rollout, where they didn't want it marred by questions about Benghazi or emails, and is she going to open up as time goes on? We just don't know.
Well, the question I asked Joe Manchin, and I'd like to get your take on this, Dana, and also you, April. I mean, why is it that a party that's won the last two elections, some would even say they won the last three, because a lot of Democrats still think that Al Gore won that election. Why is it that party comes up with one candidate?
I think it's extraordinary, Bob. And if you look at O'Malley, I mean, in that interview, he was hardly challenging Hillary at all. And I think if he's just going to sit there and say, I did a good job as mayor of Baltimore and I was a good governor, I mean, he has as much chance of landing on the White House as if he's, you know, going in there in a gyrocopter. It's just not going to happen unless he takes her on more forcefully. There is potentially a huge populist opening here for somebody. Nobody's taking that Elizabeth Warren position, and I think it's extraordinary. They may not beat Hillary, but there's a real opportunity here, and I know you're going to have some free time after this summer.
Nominated, I will.
But Bob, you know, there is a thing called the Clinton machine, and some of the Republicans have made mention of it. Huckabee even made mention of it. But there is such a thing called the Clinton machine. I'm telling you, many of the Democrats are jumping on her bandwagon. I was talking all this week. They're saying, look, I'm telling you this now, but I'm going to go. I'm secretly right now. I'm going to go for Hillary. And she's got everyone. I mean, you've got Erskine Bowles, the former chief of staff of Bill Clinton, who said he's going to do everything in his power to get her to the presidency, to the Oval Office. So you have to remember that Hillary Clinton is a part of that machine, the Bill Clinton machine. But the Clinton folks are trying to figure out what works. And Martin O'Malley really is not a problem to them right now. Or there's really no other rock star that's out there right now.
Although it's interesting, I ran into a lot of people, Democrats in Iowa, who were intrigued by Martin O'Malley and who had gone out to see him speak. And, you know, you got to remember, Iowa is a caucus state, and a caucus involves getting into a room and talking about your choices. Well, if there aren't any choices, a caucus isn't a lot of fun. So they want more people in the race, even if they support Hillary Clinton. I talked to one guy who was in her announcement video who says, I've been a supporter of hers since fifth grade, but I want Martin O'Malley to run. So I think there is that hunger out there.
But doesn't she share a problem with Jeb Bush? You know, I interviewed George W. Bush a month or so ago, and I said, what do you think your brother's main problem is? What's his main challenge? And he said, me. He said, he has got to make the campaign about him, not about me. And that's why you're not going to see him make any big speeches out on the campaign trail, because he himself says, the minute I make a speech, then it's about me again. And he's got to keep them looking forward, not backward. Doesn't she have to do exactly the same thing? Keep people from looking in the rear view mirror and keep them focused out front. Can she do that?
Well, I think that's why you had that Jeb Bush boomlet when everybody said, wow, he's really going to be the 800-pound gorilla. And it didn't happen. It's not. There's only one tier in the Republican race now, and nobody's really broken out. And part of Jeb's problem was because who's going to run against Hillary? Well, you do need a fresh face there. And Hillary, of course, faces that same problem. The answer for that, though, is to get out there and talk to people. It's not to sit in your Scooby-Doo van being chased by the media down a lawn in Iowa and refuse to get out there. I think Democrats should want somebody in there challenging her. I think you see the Scooby-Doo van if you're a Democrat and you say, ruh-roh.
Well, but this was
oh, my gosh.
This was only the first week. And I got to say, I think Hillary Clinton did what she had to do, frankly. Whatever she did, the Republicans weren't going to like. But she went out. Yes, some of this stuff was orchestrated. She went out and she laid some concerns among Democrats, some former Obama supporters, that you're going to have a voice in this Iowa campaign. She met privately and said, look, you're going to be able to play the music at the rallies. You're going to pick what we do. That's not how it was. And I talked to a Democrat out there who said, are we going to be dictated by some New York consultant? And she reassured him. She said, no, this is going to be an Iowa campaign. That's different from last time. And this is only the first week. Now, eventually, she's going to have those impromptu moments. She's going to have to get in the scrum with reporters like all these Republicans did in Iowa or in New Hampshire this weekend and take tough questions. That has to happen. But really, this is only the first week. So
I think
we have to cut her some slack.
You absolutely cannot
overstate that. I mean, I completely agree with you.
And the Clinton folks are saying, they said, you know, we're going at it learning. It was the first week. And this week we're going to see her at a construction site. We're going to see her at a community college. And they're trying to figure out really what works. And beyond the Scooby-Doo van, the $60,000 Scooby-Doo van, you know, there are efforts to try to retweak it, to keep the momentum going, even if Martin O'Malley or whomever else on the Democratic side decides to jump in. And even though the Republicans are still pointing at the Scooby-Doo van and talking about her.
Hillary Clinton is never going to, no matter how many vans she gets in or fast food restaurants she stops at, she's never going to look like a regular person who goes through all the abrasions of daily life. That's not going to happen. Where her strength is, and it came through even behind the bulletproof glass of these staged events, was that she's been thinking about these issues of family and wages and health care her entire life. So when she refers to a scholarship she set up when she was First Lady of Arkansas, she has some facility with the issue. So she's not going to be able to tell somebody, look, I know what it's like to change diapers, because it just isn't going to seem authentic. But she can say, hey, when I was thinking about these issues that you care about now for 30 years, that's where her stronger...
But she's changing her grandchild's diapers right now, so she can say that.
She can say it, but it's not going to make people think she's just like us.
I think this, the problem still goes back to this. And I mean, anybody who saw that hilarious Saturday Night Live skit where she's practicing making her opening video, and guess who keeps showing up looking over her shoulder? But hey, don't forget.
Nowhere to be seen this week, by the way.
Is that good for her or bad for her, Nancy?
You know, I think it will be good for her in certain places and at certain times. It's not good for her right now while she's trying to establish that she's the candidate, one and only, front and center. But there are going to be times when he can come out and be more comfortable with the press than she can. And so he can kind of create that image of openness that she's striving to achieve, but she can, you know, she can avoid us.
I want to go back and just play you something that Jeb Bush said up in New Hampshire at a breakfast up there when he got to the subject of, is he going to be his own man? And here's how he put it.
Everybody knows me as George's boy, Barbara's boy, W's brother. I have some other family members, but if I'm going to go beyond the consideration of running for the highest office in the land, I need to share my heart to show a little bit about my life experience. For those that have family members, I think you can appreciate this. We're not always like our brother or sister or mom and dad. We all have our own unique DNA and our own life experiences.
So he obviously knows that's what he's got to do, but how does he do that, David?
I think the ironic thing is that if Jeb Bush was named Jeb Johnson and a successful two-term governor from Florida, he might be in a better position in the Republican Party right now, other than the money. What the Bush name brings him is the money and the connections. But I think that the W stuff, he can't get around it. It is going to follow him everywhere, just like, frankly, the Clinton, you know, her husband and what he did is going to follow Hillary. I don't think he's going to be able to do it. And I think that's why you're seeing in some of these pollings, his favorability, you know, it's under 50% in some of these early primary states. That's a problem for the presumed early front runner.
He's also making really no effort, I think, to get away from his brother in particular. You hear him out there using the word evildoers, and we're all, you know, having PTSD flashbacks to 2001. You know, so where is Jeb different from George W. Right. on policy? Right. I don't think we've seen it yet. And you're right, it's a parallel concern for Hillary. Where is she going to be different from where her husband was? You know, she was asked, or her campaign was asked about trade this week. Huge fight between Obama and the Democratic base. She just completely punted, said she's not getting involved.
Or was she going to be different from Barack Obama, not just her husband? I think Jeb Bush has a model for how to do this. When he ran for governor in Florida, everybody said the same thing, you're just another Bush. So they called him Jeb, you know, got rid of the last name. But he also said, I went to 200 schools. I went and hustled and spent the time in the schools and showed that I cared about the issue. In other words, he didn't talk about how he wasn't George's brother. He showed that he was his own person. Right now, he's spending a lot of time raising money, but they hope they'll have this opportunity to do a similar thing, show who he actually is. Now, that's hard to do in today's news cycle, but that's his real challenge, is to actually show who he is. And they hope that the caricature, which has these numbers pretty bad for him right now, people will say, oh, I thought he was something else. Now he's this other thing, and that's potentially intriguing. It's very funny. It sounds very much like what you hear from supporters of Hillary Clinton for their model of introducing a new person that's hard to introduce as new because everybody knows her.
Nancy, do you think this email business is going to prove to be important in this campaign?
I think that congressional Republicans will make sure to keep it at the forefront throughout her campaign. It's no accident that the House Benghazi Committee said, we want to make sure we hear from you by May 1st, because they knew she was going to roll out her campaign in April. And so they said, like, let's dog the campaign announcement with more about Benghazi and the emails. And I think that that is going to kind of dribble along. And it's part of the reason that I think they are afraid for her to take questions, because they're worried that all the questions are going to be about emails and not about her vision for the future.
And what about all this foreign money? There's no question that a lot of money poured into the Clinton Foundation. Mm-hmm. And I guess they've said now, what's the latest now? They've said they're going to limit that from here on in.
They've limited the amount, and she's no longer on the board. So she's pulled away from that a bit. She's separated from it a bit.
But aren't the Republicans going to say, well, but you ought to give it back, what you've already got?
Of course they're going to do that, and they're going to say you should release your server to get the emails off. And that's going to be in the background here, I think, throughout. But the problem for the Republicans is they can't run a general election campaign right now. I went to the Nationals game this week, and the RNC is giving out defeat Hillary beer koozies. That's all well and good, but we have, as Lindsey Graham said, 35 people running for the Republican presidential nomination. They seem to think the way to do this is to each be more shrill than the other in lambasting Hillary Clinton, to the point where you have Donald Trump retweeting a vulgar tweet about Hillary Clinton. That's not going to, I think, win any of them the nomination. They've got to differentiate themselves other than in how they can be the most anti-Hillary.
But yes, Hillary Clinton does have some issues. She has several albatrosses hanging around her neck, but at the same time, the Republicans are using this against their advantage, for their advantage. But when is it that they're going to start internalizing, saying, we got to point against each other, look at each other, and point at each other? Because once they start pointing at one another, the fractures within that party will start showing. And whether it be W, or not W, Jim, I'm sorry, I'm pointing W.
Well, hey, that's the problem.
No, that is the problem.
Whether
it be Jeb or Cruz or whomever else, you know, Huckabee, whoever else. I mean, once they start looking inward, they're going to show all the fractions, and Hillary is going to rise, even with the hearings. There's going to be a back and forth, who's got the momentum, who's got the momentum here, who's got the momentum there. But the issue is, when will the finger stop pointing at Hillary and go inward into their own
party? Well, you know, one of the interesting things, I mean, we are now in the age of anything goes. There's nothing over the top anymore. And one of the more interesting comments made by Huckabee this week, he told a radio station out in Iowa, I think it was, that people whose children were thinking about going into the U.S. military, they might be wise to kind of put that off until you have another commander-in-chief, because the current one is not very nice to Christians.
Well, that's going to get him a headline. And
it got him a headline.
It's going to get him a headline, and it looks like he is getting closer to being closer to announcing to the announcement of actually running. I think we're going to have two or three more announcements in May. But, you know, again, there's only so much piece of the pie. I mean, with these guys that on the Republican side that can throw the red meat. I mean, Ted Cruz is just as good rhetorically. You've got Ben Carson, who is also going to probably looks like he's getting into the ring. Mm-hmm. And I think eventually what's going to happen is, you're right, the Republicans have been pretty good in New Hampshire. They haven't pointed the arrows at each other yet. Right. That is coming, but I think the ultimate argument in the Republican Party is going to be, who can beat Hillary? That's why you're hearing all the Hillary comments now. It's going to be electability. Who can beat her?
It's true, but because they're all trying to compete to beat her, and there's not so much distinguishing free running room, what they're going to do, and this happened with the Democrats in 2008, is they're going to get into a competition on policy. You see Chris Christie trying to wake everybody up by saying, I've got ideas about entitlements and Social Security, purely because you can only do so much to beat the other guy out in the beating up of Hillary. You just can't be that clever.
One thing, and we haven't talked about him, Marco Rubio. I mean, doesn't he also have a little problem here? And, you know, I asked him about it. If you looked at his profile, it's very similar to that of Barack Obama. And a lot of people thought Barack Obama didn't work out too well. Doesn't he have to prove to his party that he's not Barack Obama.
He's got to prove to his party he's not Barack Obama. Even though he's still, someone considers still a novice on the Hill, he's got to show that he has the potential to be an executive. He can sit there at the highest heights and make the decisions. But the problem for him is he's so far right that when it comes, because he's focusing in mainly on things for the primary, but when it comes to the general election, you know, he's got the immigration piece, but all the other stuff, he's very far right. And I don't think he's going to be able to pull the masses of the Republican Party together like he wants to.
And I think that's why Rubio is polling in the high single digits. And, you know, each of them has trouble breaking through a dozen, 15 points here. So normally you would expect, you know, some to drop out and others to gain those followers. But somebody like Rubio can raise $40 million and stay in this race as long as he wants, as can all of these other guys. And you can't see how the race consolidates here. And that does leave a huge opening for you, Bob, if you choose to take the nomination this summer.
John, if you had to, and this would be nothing but a horseback guess, who do you think is going to still be around when we get to the New Hampshire primary, which is, after all, 10 months away?
You know, Bob, I think a lot of them are going to be around because in the old days they'd get winnowed because they'd run out of money, or people would think you're kind of off to the side, you're kind of a loser. Now you have the money because of the super PACs that can operate around you. And also, being an honest man in a process that is against you is a great way to get on talk radio, to get your own TV shows, and to build your own following for whatever you may want to do in the future. So I think a lot of these candidates, separate and apart from, these are all real candidates. They have held real jobs, governors, senators. They can hold a room. I think you're going to have a lot of people around, which means to win, you might see a pretty small percentage as a winning percentage.
Well, you know, we have to end it right there. But once again, I've always said every campaign is different. And certainly this one is going to be different than any that I can remember. Today, we mark a somber anniversary, 20 years since the Oklahoma City bombing, one of the worst terrorist attacks our country has ever seen.
As a nation, we were just coming to learn about terrorism from abroad. On the heels of the first World Trade Center attack 2 years earlier, many of us immediately assumed foreign terrorists were behind this bomb. But within days, eyewitnesses led investigators to, of all people, U.S. Army veterans Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. That weekend, then White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta appeared on Face the Nation.
There is nothing, there is absolutely nothing, real or imaginary, that in any way justifies the killing of defenseless children. These people are not patriots. They're cowards. They're not heroes. They're criminals.
When the final death toll came in 2 weeks later, 168 people were dead, including 19 children.
Nichols was convicted on all counts and is currently serving life without parole. McVeigh was sentenced to death and executed in 2001, 3 months before 9/11. Well, that's it for us today. Before we go today, I want to thank someone who's been the artistic talent behind the scenes here at Face the Nation. Deborah Hasselmark is responsible for the graphics and the look of the show, and she'll be leaving us in CBS to start a new chapter in her life. We want to wish her all the best. Good luck, Deb. We are going to miss you. The rest of us will be here next week, so we'll see you then. Today's guests were Florida Senator Marco Rubio, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. The senior producers are Rob Hendon and Jill Jackson. This broadcast was directed by Sue Ann Stockey-Wayne. Face the Nation originates in CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com. And you can follow Face the Nation, Bob Schieffer, and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Face the Nation is also rebroadcast on our digital network, CBSN, at 2 and 6 p.m. Eastern every Sunday.